Is this thing on? Is this thing on? Hello? Hello?
Witness me, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is actually back. We are up and running. We are at episode 208. I'm sorry we were gone for as long as we were, but it's been kind of a weird couple weeks.
I just went through a breakup with my country, and then I got sick. Stress, man.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
Definitely. It's been a really strange 2 weeks. I think there was like the full, you know, stages of grief kind of action for me. So for those listening out of, you know, time here, I mean, you could be listening to this whenever, who knows, future civilizations could be listening to our show. Hi.
I hope not.
Hi, future civilizations. But
gotcha.
In case you're wondering, this is our first podcast after the election of 2016. Let's just say 2016 has been not a thing. This has been a real shitty year.
I thought 2015 was a real kick in the nuts, but then 2016 happened. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is happening now.
It's on. It's on for sure. So I'm still kind of at a loss. This is why we didn't record like the day after the election. I think we were slated to, and then we both kind of were texting the night of the election. We're like, you know, I don't know if I can talk about this or anything. Like,
I think we needed the time and perspective.
Yeah, not that it's been quite enough time, nor I've. No. I think I've developed. No,
it's going to get worse because then the inauguration is actually going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think part of it is it literally is exactly as you described it. And we were texting about that like the next day. It's like we broke up with America. There was some like major kind of schism in our worldview about how that works. And I think that's a really good analogy for how it goes, because you know, when you're in a relationship and it kind of ends suddenly, not all the time are you, you know, completely cognizant of what or why or what to do or what to even say or how to think about it. And so it's good that we had a little bit of time. We've collected a few thoughts here and there. This is definitely going to be a very special episode of the Not a Thing podcast. We'll see if it ends happily or not. We're certainly going to learn a thing or two as we talk through some of our feelings after the election. And if you would like to join us, not live, but if you'd like to join us on another podcast, or if you'd like to join the discussion afterwards, tweet at us, Facebook us, you know, say hi to us.
Throw some comments on the post.
Yeah, yeah. Say hi to us in the hallways and just be like, dude, what's up? Because I think that's actually one of the things we'll get to. We're going to start with our where we normally start in the show with our not things. And I feel like there are a lot of them. So we're going to kind of go through them and see how we do. One of the big ones, like we had been talking about, is that, you know, stages of grief kind of action. And that really was a thing. I definitely felt quite a few of those kinds of emotions, you know, denial and bargaining and anger and depression. I'm still not sure I'm at acceptance yet. I think I've actually, if there's anything, I'm settling kind of towards anger, which is not great. But I think if I can channel it, it will work, you know, in my favor. But a lot of the noise that I'd heard in the days immediately after were, there was just a lot of people that were surprised by how the election turned out. And I think there's a number of reasons for that, and we'll probably get to them. But a lot of the reaction went in that classic five stages of grief. There was a lot of people that didn't believe it. There were a lot of people that were angry about it and were posting just like really awful things on the internet. There was, you know, a couple notes about, you know, California potentially leaving the union in order to escape the you know, the issues with the United States and everything else. And that's clearly like the bargaining stage.
To be fair, I know that I commented or posted something about a post relating to California secession.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to state for the record, I've been a proponent of that for far before this. We are the golden goose,
yes,
of this country.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting, I think, reasons both ways on that. Clearly, you know, trying to put that in effect in the amount of time that it would happen before, you know, too much Trump stuff happens.
If the electoral college and Congress in general has taught us anything, we get taxation without equal representation.
Yeah. Oh, the Electoral College. Not a thing.
No.
Let's just jump on that right now. Not a thing. I think it that's been known for quite a while, but I think because you need a constitutional amendment to change it, that's real rough. That's like real, real hard to pull together. There is an interstate pact, like informal agreement that people are trying to get the states to sign on to. And I think 10 states have signed on to it, all of which tend to vote Democratic. So that's kind of an issue because we kind of need you would need like kind of everybody, or at least, you know, a majority of the electoral-ridden states to pull that together. It's the Electoral College. I mean, we can't discuss it here. There are too many weird things about it, and that's part of the problem. Like the fact that you have to explain it is you have to have like a minor in political science to kind of explain the history of it, and then why it's still around, even though historically it's kind of a weird and suspect thing. It's odd, and it probably has been, you know, time for it to go for quite a while. Whether it will actually go this time, I don't know. I think there's bigger fish to fry, as it were, on this. But yeah, that's...
Well, this is the second time in less than two decades that system has overruled the will of the people.
Yeah, yeah. Both times it was in favor of a Republican president.
Interesting.
Oh, the will of the people. And that's another thing. Mandate, not a thing. Please stop using that word, people on TV and the internet.
Unless you're going out on a date with a man, then that's totally fine.
I guess that's a thing. Yeah. But
you just call it a date, either way.
Right. I think that, you know, human date. Then it's more inclusive, you know?
Only to the humans. I mean, yes, that makes sense.
But I think there's been a lot of talk, and a lot of that talk that I've run into has been in social media, and that's its own thing. That needs like a whole like explosion. Like for a few days, I just didn't want to be on the internet. I mean, not because I didn't want news or I didn't want interaction with people. I just thought I felt so just annoyed is, you know, the mildest way I could put it. Just that of the way social media kind of works. And we've talked about some of the mechanics of that in the past, especially about how the news feed in Facebook kind of works. It really is prioritizing engagement over news. And the problem with prioritizing engagement over news is that clicks and likes and what is trending isn't or shouldn't be news. That's certainly you know, a way to kind of view the news or view aspects of it. But if you're using, if you're calling it news, it should be ideally less biased and more comprehensive informationally. And that's really what I think the gist of the problem is. There have been a lot of think pieces about Facebook and their news and the culpability of Facebook in this election. Culpability is like, that's its own not thing, I think.
I don't know that that's on the company so much as the people receiving the content.
I think there's certainly a lot of blame to go around. I think it's very easy to build your bubble, and a lot of those bubbles were popped on that day. But it's very easy to build a bubble and never explore it or leave it or go outside of it. And I think that's to kind of discussion's detriment, which we've talked about in the past. But I think especially in terms of you know, how kind of political discourse happens, or really any discourse, it's very easy to make a thing polarizing, because you only have two choices. It's like or dislike, and you know, dislike is implied in a lot of the systems that are around. Facebook did roll out like a bunch of different ways to, you know, kind of react to a post. And that's something else also, is like reacting is not a substitute for discourse. It's not.
Yes.
It's almost the least effort thing you can do in terms of interacting with information. I think the least effort would be to do nothing, which is also not a thing. Anyone that looked at election results probably saw a bunch of turnout numbers and something like, and this number is not accurate. I think it has it's less than it was, but at least very immediately after the election, there were guesses that the turnout was something like 40. Or 54%, so 46% of eligible voters didn't vote, and so that's a problem, or at least I think so.
Those are the people. I mean, there's been a lot of blame thrown around since this happened.
Yeah,
people saying, you know, Trump won the female vote. That's the thing.
Yeah,
Clinton didn't win the demographics that she needed to win, and I think the larger issue, that's not going to solve anything. The people are going to vote how they're going to vote. And the people, whether they were convinced or not, that's how they voted.
Yeah.
But the people who didn't vote at all and just left it all to everybody else, that's where the problem is.
Yeah. That is a very significant problem, because that means that 46% or whatever it is, plus the side that lost, that amount of the country can potentially claim this is not my country. And that's not how it works. It's it unfortunately is our country. Or fortunately, it is our country.
What we got.
And participating in, you know, in the process of having a country is one of those things that people should not take for granted. It's it's real important, as shown. I think, you know, you mentioned another part of it, which is, you know, how the vote kind of went, and then, you know, who was to blame. And there's so much. I mean, that discussion came up so much in real life conversations that I had with folks, which I highly recommend real life conversations like this one. This is great. The Not a Thing podcast is a thing still and will continue to be. But the conversations that I had, so many of the discussions were like, oh, well, if only, you know, more minorities showed up, or if only the, you know, this, that.
If only half the people that didn't vote showed up. I would be much more accepting of a loss. Clearly, I didn't vote for Trump. Clearly, we've talked a lot of shit about him on this podcast.
Yeah.
refer to episode, insert episode here, where we talked about a Trump butt plug. That is now our president.
Yeah.
It was funny then. It's not so funny now.
Yeah.
Although you should, everyone should go out and buy those and
right.
have fun. But no, I'd rather take a hard truth of this is who our country actually is. If you had, say, a 90% turnout rate.
Yeah.
But when it's only under 50% of people even turned out.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
No, it's hard. This is why a mandate is not a thing. It's like, it definitely doesn't represent the will of the people. It's the will of, like, some of the people, which I guess if you have won anything at all, you could claim a mandate. But that's not how that word should work, in my opinion. But there's a lot of kind of margins around how this worked. I mean, clearly it was the way the Electoral College kind of works in a Electoral College split with the popular vote, it's always in the margins. There's always a state that is more representative or more represented or where the people's votes are more represented than in other states. Like California, there was something like, I don't know, I forget what the margin was. It was millions of people that were voting for Hillary versus Trump. But those, you know, that margin essentially doesn't matter because of the way votes are counted. And that's partially the Electoral College, but also partially because of the way that the way that we have political parties, which is to say that we sort of have more than two parties, but not really. That's its own other thing. Political kind of wrangling and the way all of that kind of is set up is so confusing and strange. And I think that is a significant part of it. I think that's a real big factor. Maybe, I mean, there were a lot of factors. People were saying race or racism or understanding how race politics works, misogyny, but I think, and information wise, but I think a big piece of how how kind of everything broke down is that there's the people that voted for Trump don't necessarily, or a significant portion of that group don't necessarily want Trump. They just wanted the system upended, is the way that I've been kind of looking at it and seeing it. And they're embracing the outsider factor and the reset button factor more than anything else. And I that's real hard to understand. I sort of can understand it as a thought experiment kind of thing, but I feel like government and the way, you know, relationships with the world work are too complex to just say we can hit a button and it will all be okay, because I don't think it will. And I laugh at it because I think laughter is a thing, and that has certainly helped me through a lot of the last couple weeks. I highly recommend, if you're still kind of in the doldrums and not feeling like you want to engage with the election, please do go back and watch any comedy that you continue to laugh at. I mean, they're still going to be funny. They're still going to, you know, lower your blood pressure. They're still going to make you kind of happy about life. As long as it's not something that accidentally has Donald Trump in it, you'll probably be fine. But comedy and music especially have really helped ground me for the last kind of two weeks and change. How have you been coping with the breakup, as it were?
That first week was pretty rough, and then I got sick, so that distracted me.
Yeah.
We
had a good time. You know, you had hosted a party the week of the
yeah, that was good. And that goes back to it was a real life interaction with real people.
Yes.
in a non-digital space. It was very nice.
Yes. Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to let off some steam.
I think that's a lot of it. I think the interactions with real people, you learn so quickly how well and how easily that kind of makes you feel whatever you're going to feel. You're going to feel whatever you feel like 10 times faster and stronger if you're interacting with a person versus something online. And I think it's easy to get that kind of whatever, you know, neurotransmitter hit of like, oh, I'm doing something or I'm feeling something, especially outrage. Outrage is unfortunately a very big motivator on the internet. And it's very easy to be outraged. It's hard to direct that outrage into something that would actually change something. That's its own problem, and currently continuing issue right now. But I mean, I think the value of human interaction really helped a lot as well in the last kind of 2 weeks for me. Plus, it's just great to see you. I mean, we don't record face to face or haven't in quite a while, and so it's nice to see. People that you only hear about on the internet, as it were.
Okay, good. It's still Alan. I haven't been talking to some bot the last 3 years.
Not yet. Not yet. Robots are coming, and robots are the things taking people's jobs, not foreign workers. Sorry, everyone that thought Trump would save them from foreign workers.
This is that's something about this election that has bothered me. Is the reasons that a lot of people gave for why they voted, they're not addressing the problems.
Yeah.
They're just addressing the band-aids or symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you're not going to fix those things until you fix these other things first.
Yeah.
And for me, the biggest issue of all, I feel like all other issues on a planetary scale don't mean shit compared to climate change.
Yes.
Thinking from purely from a species survival standpoint, that's where we're at the point of. It's like, we need to do something or there won't be humans to have these disagreements with each other.
Yes. Yeah. And the...
And they're now handing over the keys to the EPA, to climate deniers, and it's bad.
Yeah,
this is the problem.
That is a very big problem. I think the other kind of takeaway from that is that the reasons that people voted for Trump, one of the other big ones was, they were going to drain the swamp. You know, the famous phrase for Washington, D.C., it was a swamp. And some people think it still is in terms of how corrupt it is and everything else. And yet all the people that are running in or being appointed from the rumored appointments for Trump's cabinet, Rudy Giuliani, Newt Gingrich. These are people that are not, I mean, they are the monsters that were in the swamp. We're not draining the swamp.
The gators are running the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that cognitive dissonance about like what you expected to happen and what is happening. And that's just, I don't know how people can not see that. And that's an issue. I think there's so many kind of factors at play about how that kind of pulled together. And I think that plays into a lot of the things that I've been reading recently, which have been far too many think pieces about what happened and what went wrong. And I think that's good. I think analysis does have to happen. And I think that is something that you can like do something with and learn from. But you can't just read those and you know, be happy. I mean, they're made at a very you know, it's that the hindsight is 20/20 kind of phrase that applies. It's like, yes, you can now see this was a problem, this was a problem, these things are there. But if you're never looking forward to fixing it, that's another problem that people aren't really discussing yet.
As somebody who supported Bernie Sanders throughout the early parts of the campaign until that was no longer an option, part of me really wants to say I told you so. And I know that's not a feeling that I have alone. Like, I know a lot of people who supported Bernie who feel that way.
Sure.
Like, this is what we thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
And then it fucking happened. And all the people who treated us like we were idiots, who said, you know, oh, that's not being realistic, that's, you know, we got to make the adult decision and go with Hillary. No, this is exactly why we didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a reason he was polling ahead of Trump.
Yeah.
And she wasn't.
Yeah.
To the same degree.
Mm. Yeah, that's another thing. The amount of, what is it? Someone described it as taking personality over politics is how it was described. So people are voting for Trump as a, and this sickens me to say, because they thought he was a better person.
Yeah. No, I mean, these are the two least likable candidates ever had.
Right. And I'm...
And not to say that Bernie wouldn't have had problems with more attack ads run against him as it got closer and the more people knew about him. They may not agree with a lot of his politics. But running a campaign like it's still 2008, like, they already decided. Like, when Obama's on, if it was going to be Joe Biden, Joe Biden's not going to run because of the horrible thing that happened with his family.
Yeah.
Again, which is horrible.
Yeah.
But as soon as they decided, okay, it's going to be Hillary, it's like they just froze the whole process.
Yeah.
And it didn't keep up with what the actual politics of the direction things were headed in the country.
Right.
The argument that we feel like we weren't being listened to, that's true. There's a whole portion of the country that was being ignored.
Yeah.
Because the decision had already been made.
Yeah, I think a lot of the Democratic leadership, and I think this has been kind of a pattern with Democrats on the whole, is that it's kind of over intellectualized about how it operates. It kind of operates on a, like, people will make the right decision kind of action. If we give people enough information, they're going to choose the right thing. And I think
that's not true.
That's not, unfortunately not. It really isn't. And
think it used to be.
Yeah.
When people weren't overwhelmed with the amount of media that's out there.
Right.
With the amount of information, trying to discern what's an actual fact and what's bullshit.
Yes.
There's too much stimulus. You can't do it.
Yeah. And
too much to keep track of.
And if there's anything that you can say was a, you know, positive on the, you know, on the Republican side, and this has really been the case for a while, is that when they have a message, when there is a thing that they want to make, I mean, this was why when you watched, you know, Jon Stewart with The Daily Show, when they would do the clips of everyone saying the exact same phrase, the exact same talking point. It's because repetition works. Repetition is a thing. Having a consolidated talking point that you can just parrot. Yes, you're parroting it, and that's a, you know, terrible thing because you're not actually discussing it or thinking about it. But when you're trying to get something out in the public consciousness, that apparently works. And it's a thing. And so the autopsy report was this famous thing that was done in 2012. Was done on the Republican Party. You know, some folks in the GOP wrote this, you know, long thing about, like, here's what we have to do to motivate voters. And interestingly enough, Trump won in spite of that. Like, a lot of the things that were in that were, you know, moderating to be more inclusive and changing a bunch of things. I think it's exactly as you said. If these are the kinds of things that would have worked you know, before social media kind of exploded as a way to, you know, make information bubbles, and the amount of news that's around, and the way that just the way that the campaigns were run is, you know, that made sense then. I think if there were you know, the autopsy report that has to come out for this, and I've already seen a couple things written in a similar way, like this is what has to happen. I fully think that, you know, the big one that has to come up is that the you know, if the Democrats want to kind of come back as a party, they have to, you know, take the fight, learn some of the tricks that are run. And it's I think it's unfortunate, being a person that kind of likes intellectual discourse, but but really, I mean, the, you know, reaching across the aisle, and a lot of the things that, you know, we're gonna, you know, when they go low, we go high, you know, I think that's amazingly well intentioned and unfortunately doesn't work. I think this election has really shown that, you know, the people that vote, the people that turn out, have to be fired up and have to come from a place of, you know, of feeling like their vote will actually change things. And I think that is that's a function of kind of leadership, and that has to get shaken up a lot, like a lot. and then messaging and getting information out and connecting with people, and yeah, you can have positive discourse, and you can make things kind of work from a grassroots level too. I think, you know, if the success of Bernie Sanders' campaign, at least as far as it went, really showed that was that's a thing. And I think the success of Trump, you know, the way that, you know, his numbers essentially were ahead of the polls. And that's because a lot of the people that voted don't or didn't participate in those polls. These are folks that, you know, they literally came out of the woodwork about how they're voting and everything else. And that was a surprise. And I think that again is a function of, you know, the kind of personalities involved and the messaging that was present. So I think a lot of the tactics that were found distasteful about, you know, obstructionism and parroting talking points and things like that, I think, you know, in at least the short term, that's probably going to be a thing from the Democrats' side, or it should be if the Democrats want to have any kind of, you know, meaningful response to how things are going. But I also see, you know, not to be a complete downer about how our country's going, there is a lot of stuff that that people can do, and there's a lot of that people can kind of take, you know, take in, you know, at least at a human level, at least one to one, what can you do? And a lot of that is kind of focused around you know, human really interacting with people and systems. I think one of the major issues that we talked about, you know, in the past on the show is that kind of hashtag activism and outrage just doesn't do anything. It's not enough. I mean, it does something from a awareness point of view, but it doesn't necessarily do anything where the rubber meets the road. And that really has to come from, like, people talking to people. It really has to come from money being donated to causes. It really has to go towards money that props up actual news sources that can actually get information out, and that they will do their job well when competing with kind of, you know, the fake news and propaganda that's coming out of Russia and all that kind of stuff, which we've also talked about in insert episode here on the show. There's a lot of ways to involve people in the process to make things happen, but it actually involves people to do things. So there, if there's one takeaway from this. It's that, you know, it was a great poster that I saw live. Actually, I saw it in person. This was amazing. It was the phrase was like, you know, give me the serenity to accept the things that I can't change. What someone wrote was, they had written that and crossed it out and said, I resolve to change the things I can't accept. And I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. So I don't know. That's the thing that, kind of I've been coming back to. That's why I was saying, like, the stage of grief that I tend to be settling in is not quite just acceptance. It seems to be acceptance kind of tinged with anger. And I think I'm hoping anyway that I can use that as a, like, hey, remember, this is something that needs to change, and I have to actually do it, and I have to feel something to actually do it. I can't just be kind of passive in the stream of time. So that's kind of where my stages of grief are ending up, is that there was, you know, and I think we can be unanimous in fully recommending watching the finale, or the season finale for
John Oliver.
Last week tonight with John Oliver. So this, I think it was two Sundays ago is when it aired, and so it's probably available on YouTube for free now if you look in the right places, but it's definitely on HBO. And he goes through a really just scathing takedown of what happened, but then also what to do, and gives a great list of resources to donate to. You know, he mentions an exhaustive list, and there's plenty out there that are going to need donations. I mean, any organization that Trump has essentially threatened. So anything about LGBT youth and rights, anything about reproductive rights, the environment, as we mentioned, anything supporting that. But then also news sources. So actually subscribing to a newspaper, or ProPublica, which is a kind of cross, I mean, they're multidisciplinary, but they do a lot of very deep dives, often news about the news, which I think is very interesting, and, you know, what is being reported and why. And then there are a lot of sources that we've talked about in the past, like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which, your right to do stuff on the internet is potentially in danger, and your rights in general about things, which is why the ACLU is also in that list of things to kind of look at and donate to. You know, we joke on the show, you know, please sponsor an aspect of the show. Please send your money to one of those things. We'll still continue to do the show as long as we can anyway. And that kind of comes into one other thing about this election, and that's kind of the action by not only mainstream media, but then also just people in general to kind of come back to a feeling of normal, or however that works. I always think about this in terms of the Great Depression. One of the things that I think it was Warren Harding, he said, like, let's bring back to America a feeling of normalcy, which it's not a word, he totally made it up. So that's part of why I love it, but it's tempting to want things to be normal again. It's tempting to want things to be kind of quiet, and this makes sense, and that's just noise in Washington, and, you know, none of it will affect me. And I think that's dangerous. I think what is normal is very different from what it has been in many years. And I think Even if Hillary had won, that kind of level of complacency and this is fine, it should not be a thing. That should be something that is continually scrutinized, even if the side you think wanted to win wins. You still have to hold them to account. Like, I still think Republicans should hold Trump to account. I mean, I don't want those things to happen that were promised. But what's interesting is Trump is already welching on some of the things that he'd promised to the people that voted for him. So, I mean, there is an amazing amount of, like I said, a disconnect between what someone might expect and what actually happens. And maybe things might actually happen and it won't be the worst thing ever, but you can't just sit idly by and let that happen. I mean, I guess you can, but that sucks.
You can do what you want, but you suck.
Yeah, you just have to be aware that it sucks, and it might suck more for people that aren't you. And that's a big thing for me, is that that level of empathy and how this is going to affect people that aren't me. I mean, I feel fortunate in that I live in California, and that, like we were saying, California is freaking awesome. I love you, California. It's a song. It's great. But California is not the rest of the U.S., and there's a lot of the U.S. that is going to be in a sucky place. There's a lot of folks in California that are going to be in a sucky place, and that kind of empathy for kind of justice, I think, is missing. or people are not seeing enough of that. And I think that's part of the problem. And I think, you know, and that was some of that is a reaction to, you know, the people that were kind of left out of things and disenfranchised. But at the same time, and I saw this as a really good article saying that as much as it was a bubble for people, you know, in cities to or in urban areas to think that, oh, you know, Clinton is going to take it and there's going to be no problem because they're surrounded by like-minded people. There's a similar bubble for people that were Trump supporters as well. And that and one of the major differences that someone pointed out was that the bubble for Clinton supporters definitely burst when the election results came out. But the bubble for Trump supporters is harder to burst because those folks don't necessarily travel. They don't necessarily go out and meet people that are not like them. Whereas people in urban areas tend to be wealthier, so they tend to travel. They tend to see more of the U.S. They tend to kind of have or gain in what my kind of understanding of it, they tend to gain more of an appreciation for, you know, the differences in people. And I think, you know, the differences in people are why I like living in America. So I'm hoping that people can kind of still embrace that. It's going to be kind of a rough time with all the other stuff going on and all the things that are happening. But, you know, the diversity and the melting pot and all of that stuff that we used to talk about a lot about America should still be a thing, I think.
The things that actually make America great. it never was not great.
Right.
Other than the ways that it's not great and that we recognize.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, the overly simplistic language of make America great again has always frustrated me. I think
that reminds me of my middle school political campaign when I ran for class vice president under the campaign of vote for me or I'll lose. I feel like you might as well just said that. And it worked.
Did you end up winning?
Not that time. I ran again and I did, but not that time.
All right. So there's still a chance, is what that tells me.
We should throw the link up to those Trump butt plugs in the like
in the show notes. Yeah, I'll see if
places to donate to help and Trump unplugs.
We are gonna do our best to keep recording, to be if some semblance of normalcy, but I can't guarantee that we're not gonna talk about politics again on this show. I don't think we ever really had that as a actual prohibition. It was it's more just there were other things to talk about. There's so many other things in the news, so many other things that we think people hadn't heard of, and we'd like to think that you'd heard of politics and heard of what was happening. But
if you haven't, get yourself educated.
Yeah.
And, multiple sources. Check your sources. Use your critical thinking.
Critical thinking. Still a thing. Hopefully. We're like I said, we're going to keep continuing the show. If you'd like to be part of a show, with your things, please let us know. Tweet at us, Facebook us, let the HAL 900 know on the notathingpodcast.com website, and we'll get through this.
I'll see you on the Fury Road, Alan. Shiny and chrome. Immortan Trump.
Talk to you soon, Brendan.